Hi.
This is Gary Lactus.
And this is The Beast Must Die.
And you're listening to
Silence!
The popular comics podcast. Listen to, judging from last week, of course, we appealed for some drawings inspired by my Fantastic Four song. And yeah, we haven't got any. I'm sure there are plenty of people who listened to that and probably thought about it. So that's nice. So. Yeah.
I think it's safe to say that we're having a fairly seismic impact on the comics landscape.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Now, I'm in my spaceship on my sofa. Last week I was enjoying a beer, and what I've discovered is that a beer is very... very much a gateway drug. I'm now on heroin.
Yay!
Which is really relaxing. Really, really nice. So, I'd thoroughly recommend it to anyone. And
I'm on the lemon squash today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'll lead to harder things, no doubt.
Yeah. I'll be onto innocent smoothies, all sort of, Tropicana, orange juice. Basically, it's trouble for me, juice related trouble.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I'll have to keep an eye on you. Now, last week you were a headmaster transformer, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yes.
Yes. Before we find out what you're up to this week, perhaps we could listen to your Transformer-inspired song.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. Thunder, laser beak, ravage, prepare for battle, operation, warfare,
transforming robot in disguise. Robot, what's behind your robot eyes? Sexy, transforming to a plane or car. But can I love you for who you are?
Singing.
It's lovely, isn't it?
Well, that's very good. That's very good.
Yeah.
Dragged it into the groinal area a little bit there.
I felt it was a bit clean, and then it gets a bit dirty at the end there. So
yes. But no, it is something I'd never really thought about. What a duplicitous lover a transformer would be. Yes.
Exactly. You just can't tell, can you? I mean, are they a robot or are they a car?
Yes, it's so hard to love
either
one thing and the other as well.
Yes, unless you're Apocalypse Clarkson.
Yeah, Clarkson wouldn't have a problem, would he?
He knows what he loves the most.
Yes.
Racism and cars.
Lovely. Yeah, yes. Loves racing, yes. what are you up to this week? The Beast.
Well, I know, obviously, whilst I was happy to get my job, I unfortunately lost it drunk in charge of an Autobot. So I lost that job. No longer am I working for the Transformers. So to commiserate, I'm drowning my sorrows in the bar at the end of the world, which is where a lot of Marvel characters go to drink when they've had a rough week. It's a little known place. You might want to look it up.
Okay.
That's where I am. Yeah, pissed out of my face, hanging out with some forgotten Marvel characters. It's great. I'm having a great night.
Right. Who's there then? Who you been chatting to?
Quiet, guys. Some of the West Coast Avengers are here, and the South Coast Avengers, they're here as well. And yeah, just some stuff I'm making up. I don't really know enough Marvel characters, to be honest with you. I should get the guidebook out and find out. That's where I am today. So yeah, let's get cracking.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So yeah, what's been happening in the world of comics this week?
Yeah, let's have a mindless news roundup.
Mindless news roundup. Boo boo. Turn that into a jingle or something.
Yeah, that'd be good. Well, I think one of the big things that happened in the news was that the Image Expo happened, and they made some announcements about upcoming comics. One of them being a Grant Morrison thing he's doing with Derek Robertson called Happy.
Yes,
with an exclamation mark. Happy
with a terrible, terrible logo. Really ugly logo.
Horrid logo. Yeah.
And so what do we know about? All I know about it is that it's coming out. And it's Morrison and Robertson, and there's a picture of a feather. Feathers are somehow involved.
A picture of a feather, and he said it's a Christmas story. He's been very elusive about it. What I'm hoping for is something akin to the Filth, or, you know, a sort of out there, dense, weird, non-superhero comic. Not anything as lightweight as Joe the Barbarian. I wasn't massively into that. It was all right. But I'd like something to, you know, get my teeth into. I'm not sure whether that's what we're going to get, because I don't know how committed he is. You know, I don't know anything about it. Is it like a 4-issue miniseries? Is it one off or what? You know, so yeah, I don't know. And not superheroes, or maybe. I don't mind. It probably will be superheroes somehow, but just kind of not playing with the big two. Well, the big one really. He's only been playing with DC's properties for the last 5 or 10 years, and. You know, I like it enough. I really do, but I do want some of the old Morrison magic back. You know,
something that's just not hampered by continuity, really.
Yeah, basically, that's a much more elegant way of saying it. Yeah, something that he can really cut loose with as well. I think Robertson's an interesting choice. I wouldn't, not a sort of Morrisonian collaborator in my mind, but that's not to say it won't be great. Do you know what I mean? I suppose Chris Weston is maybe an obvious. Similar artist in that kind of slightly ugly artwork, very detailed, ugly. I mean, Robertson's, I don't think, as good as Weston, but yeah, we'll see. Don't know anything about it apart from that. But it's interesting that he's working for Image. It seems to be a lot of people migrating across to Image, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, you get a great deal at Image as a creator.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a named creator whose name is the publicity, then that's great, because Image don't really sort of promote their work so much, you know, as the other big two.
It's kind of, down to the individuals to do it themselves, in a way.
Yeah, and you get paid at the end of it, you know, you get paid at the back end, but...
I think
for a creator like Morrison, I mean, that's perfect, isn't it? He'll get a really good share of what he sells, and he'll have... really good ownership rights, and
yeah, and he won't be edited at all. There won't be any editing going on. I don't imagine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's interesting because obviously you got Brubaker and Phillips. They brought Fatale across to Image when it really fit. They did Incognito and Criminal were both done through the Marvel Icon, which is the kind of creator owned imprint. Mm-hmm. And it's odd. It's not really odd, but. It's funny to me that they didn't go through that with Fatale, because it's exactly the same creators. It sort of fits neatly in with that. It's their sort of their horror book to sit alongside their superhero and their crime book. But it's going through Image. So I don't know whether there's just I wouldn't want to speculate, because there's enough of that on the internet. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they're just sort of, people are beginning to try and sort of stretch their wings away from their parent company corporations, you know what I mean? Maybe the people are looking forward to kind of working outside of the the parameters of DC and Marvel again, which is nice. You know, it's, there's no denying that Image is basically producing a good chunk of the more interesting comics coming out at the moment, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's doing some hot shit.
It's doing a big hot shit. I know it's another announcement, maybe not of that much interest to everyone, but Howard Chaykin is doing Black Kiss 2.
Yes, I saw that, yeah. I've never read Black Kiss. I had one issue as a kid, which was sent to me, and I felt ashamed of and had to hide from my mum and dad.
Yeah, well, it's not his greatest thing. I mean, it's pretty grim and nihilistic and jaded and a bit silly, really, as well. But I quite like it. I do quite like it. I wrote a piece on it for Minus Ones. If anyone really wants to read my thoughts on it, they could go and look that up. But yeah, no, I'm intrigued because basically when he did Black Kiss, it was a kind of fuck you to the industry moment for him. He was kind of like, I've had enough of this. I'm going to work in TV on Flash, the TV series, and Superboy. Yeah, so take that, comics. And he left the industry, I think, due to sort of feeling that it was a censorious and not very interesting place to work. So he did Black Kiss as this kind of kiss off, as it were. And so now he's in a different place. I don't know where he is as a creator. And so I don't know, maybe he just wants to draw some nudie ladies giving blowjobs.
Maybe so.
You know, that's all he wants to do now. But I don't know if he's got any point to make or if it's going to have any kind of, you know, overall message or be a particular tirade. But who knows? Let's see. Quite a nice promo image, though, I thought. Quite a sort of sexy drawing, that. Sexy. yeah. So,
you could just lean into your mouthpiece there and whisper
sexy. That's sensual. Yeah, so that was some news. What else? What else happened in the news?
Well, yeah, people have been talking about Steve Wacker, and I haven't really followed this because I don't really follow
comics. You're too good for it. You're too good for it, is what you're saying.
I'm often too busy. trying to earn money to just keep the upkeep on this
massive spaceship.
Yeah, this spaceship and this cosmic sofa. But what's your take on this? I know Bobsy. Did he get involved or what?
Bobsy chimed in with a well placed Steve Wanker. I think was his contribution to the thread. Yeah. So yeah, he's basically Steve Wacker is a Marvel editor who is responsible for some very good comics over at Marvel, including Daredevil, which is a mindless favourite. And he has recently been in the last week or so has gone sort of mental on message boards, responding to people and posts in a very confrontational kind of internet troll like fashion, you
really?
Know reminds, yeah I mean to his credit I guess he's probably just like, I'm gonna wade in because this is my business and I, you know, people can get away with just making assumptions, but he chose some posts that were kind of well thought out and kind of considered responses to Marvel publishing practices and sort of treated them as though they were just annoying fanboy bitching, and kind of has his persona just is very weird and sort of passive aggressive and basically just gone like nuts. It's like being him versus hundreds of commentators on on Savage Critics and The Fourth Letter, and obviously people turn up and they're like, yeah, I'm with Steve, you internet whiny bitches need to fucking grow up, which is always good when, I don't know, anyone on the internet accuses someone else on the internet of needing to grow up. I don't know, it's always on a fucking comics form. But it's just been really weird, and it made me think about the role of the editor and how when we were growing up reading comics, the letter column was the only indication of an editor's presence, wasn't it, really? And they would respond to letter queries, and they were often fairly jovial. It just seemed like a more innocent time when people would pretend that they were just like, gee shucks, you know, thanks for the nice compliments, we'll just keep trying to make great comics, to this kind of actually getting involved and calling fans dickheads and, you know, like actually fighting them on the forums. And I guess it's just another indicator of the decreasing of barriers between creators and creatives and their audience. But it was very weird, and it couldn't help but make me just feel a bit less happy about his comics. I know that sounds stupid, I'm not really going to stop buying them, but you kind of just are like, oh, okay. I don't know, it just left a slightly sour taste in my mouth, just because it's just really weird behavior.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's an ill thought out move there.
I think he literally
not thought out at all.
Yeah, I think it's just you know, the other thing is that you can't win these internet slang battles. They just go on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so it is really pointless. I mean, I sort of think you're probably best off just letting people go on. I don't know how much impact these discussions have on sales and stuff, but maybe they do. Maybe his overlords at Marvel were like, listen, people are shit-talking about Marvel Comics. You need to get in there. It's your job to get in there and start laying down the law. But I kind of can't see that being the case. Yeah, very weird. Weird time. Kind of, you know, mildly interesting, but only in that way where you sort of think, what the fuck is this guy doing? Why is he bothering? You know? And just because he chose his targets wrong, and just I think there are probably other sites where it would be warranted. It wasn't really. So
right.
It wasn't that interesting.
Right. And, well, what a fantastic news item.
Yeah, it wasn't it? Let's talk about what's going on in the message board.
So, a man gets a bit narky on an internet forum.
Yes, that is the news.
Wow.
Nothing more important. Nothing more important has happened in the world this week.
Ah, marvellous. Yeah. Well, and that was the week in news.
Yeah. Cultural commentators. Comics then.
Yeah, what have you been reading?
Well, I've just talked for a while, so why don't you tell me what you've been reading?
Well, what have I been reading? We could start with Spaceman, which we both read.
Yep,
good stuff. Kind of, it's a little bit slow burning. I've got no problem with the dialogue now.
No.
At this point, I think Azzarello's doing a fine job, and Riso's doing an even better job. Yeah, I'm definitely going to read the whole thing now. It's getting quite intriguing. You know, it's this kidnapped child, who's famous, who's a celebrity, has been rescued by the protagonist, who's this sort of Cro-Magnon ape man designed to live in space. I'm interested in the predicament, especially as more people find out about the situation. And you kind of think, oh well, you know, he's a big thick muscly dude, isn't he? He looks like an ape and he's probably stupid. And I'm really rooting for him, and I hope he outsmarts everyone. And him and the girl who's turning out to be having quite a nice time. I like the way that she's enjoying her squalid freedom, as opposed to being this reality TV star. That's a nice little thing that's happening, little character thing. And I think it's a good comic. I think it'll read better as a collection.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Most things do nowadays. But that's all I've got to say on it, really. And it's nice to read something by Azzarello that I'm enjoying, having been quite critical of his Wonder Woman.
But then also admitting that in order to make up for being critical, you have to buy more of his comics. So it's good that you bought one that you liked.
Yes.
I agree with you, really. I like the slow burn kind of reveal of information about their past. I suspect that there might be more to Orson, who is the main spaceman. Maybe he's done something bad back up on Mars. Mm. That was kind of being hinted at, did you think? That sort of flashback sequence. And so it might be a sort of redemption act. I don't know. It is a mystery. It's being very well told. I don't have a problem with the dialogue. Lots of people seem to hate it. It's fine. I just think it's kind of, you know, it's future slang. We grew up reading 2000 AD. That's what.
Yeah, that's we're trained
in future slang. And if you like Alan Moore comics, my God, you must, you know, and you have a problem with this future slang. I mean, he does that all the time. I liked it. I really like Eduardo Risso's artwork a lot. I think it's great. I think he's got a lovely, loose but confident line. His panel layouts are very interesting. He draws super hot ladies, and he's really, really good on the Martian sequences. They really look great. They sort of they have a Mebius-like heavy metal touch, but they're not. They also are in line with the rest of the comic, but they definitely feel a bit more like a nod to sort of Euro sci-fi comics, you know?
Yeah, that sort of Lynn Clare.
Yeah, exactly. And he seems to drop the shadows out a lot more in it. And yeah, it's good. It's a good comic. Yeah, I know what you mean. I've sort of read four now. I think to not read the rest would be a bigger waste of time than slogging on with it. I think it's good. I think I want to know what happens. And I want to see some ultra-violence as well, which I suspect will be on its way. Yeah. So yeah, good stuff. I really love Dave Johnson's covers for it as well. I think they're...
Oh really?
Yeah, I just love the logo, and I just think it looks.
I like the logo. I'm not so keen on the cover artwork, really.
Right. I mean, this one was less. I mean, the actual image was less interesting, but I thought the last three have been really, really nice. Sort of bold. I think he's top, actually. I really do.
Yeah, I don't know what I don't like about it. I guess it kind of reminds me of the sort of fully painted explosion of like in 2000 AD.
Right.
I don't know. It doesn't look quite flashy enough for a cover.
Right.
For me, it's a little bit too sketchy. Maybe. I honestly don't know. But the logo up the top's great. I like
yeah,
that.
It's
reminds me of the Invisibles.
Yes, it does. Still, does look very like the Invisibles, doesn't it?
Ryan Hughes style.
Yeah, good stuff. I give it 5 brains out of 7.
Yeah, I'd give it probably 10 brains out of 13.
Yeah, okay. I think we're agreed then.
Pretty much. So.
So what else did you read?
What else did I read? Well, I did read. I finally read First Family, Fantastic Four, First Family.
I thought they were called the Future Foundation. Isn't that what that stands for, FF?
This is the Joe Casey and Chris Weston retelling of what happened after their fateful rocket trip.
So where does it pick up? Does it pick up when they've got their powers?
It picks up literally when they've just landed back. And they go into a military compound and stuff, and they sort of fight a psychic dude and some other guys. And it's not particularly good. But I enjoyed it because it's the Fantastic Four. I mean, it's worth it just for the picture of Reed Richards with he's just got his arms extended and they're sort of covering the floor. They looks like he's inside of a can of worms or something. It's really like you know when Chris Weston does flesh and meat. You know, it's that it's really playing to his strengths. But it is very. I mean, this was a good few years ago. When was this first?
Yeah, because they did the Avengers Mightiest as well, or the Earth's Mightiest, which was the Avengers. It was kind of he did the same thing for the Avengers, I think, the kind of retelling of their origin over 6 issues or whatever. So, yeah, I think that was kind of early mid 2000s,
2006. Okay. Oh, it's more recent than I thought, but he's definitely improved since then. Like, there is a lot of stiffness here. I mean, you know, it's which is symptomatic of, you know, his reliance on reference, on photo reference. However, in the 12, which issue 10, which came out this week.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he really has improved. Yeah, it just seems so much more appropriate for this particular comic. His sort of photo-referenced style creates quite a fair amount of humour, actually. There's this one of the characters, Captain Wanda, one of these 1940s characters who's been resurrected. He's Captain Wanda. He wears a mask. He's got like a utility belt. He's got a red, white, and blue top, and he's got these bare legs. And because Chris Weston is drawing him, and you know he's quite into his detail. It really, they're sort of really hairy.
Right.
He's got these really hairy legs coming out of his red pants.
Basically, what you would look like if you're a superhero, isn't it? That's kind of just described an outfit you would wear, I think.
Yeah, but that's great. There's been a big reveal in this.
So this is the 12 number 10 of 12.
The 12 number 10, of 12. So there's been a great big reveal of who done it, who killed the Blue Blade, and killed loads of people in a gay bar, and it turns out. Well, I won't say anything, but it's pretty good reveal, and it's a good solid who done it mystery. Along the way, we've got to see all the different characters and we've got to know them all sufficiently, mm-hmm. which is, you know, no mean feat considering there's 12 main characters, right. you know. And, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Chris Weston's art hasn't been better, right. really. Yeah, yeah, in recent it's times, quite... and I think he's not being inked by. I think he's inking himself here, whereas on First Family it was Erskine, Gary Erskine.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Who sort of they're very sympathetic artists, aren't they? They it's nice to probably nicer when Weston's doing himself. I think it's quite unusual that you get artists who he is one who is. Got better and better and better and better. Do you know what I mean? He really has. He improves all the time. When you look at his early 2000 AD work and compare it to now. Now, I'm not saying that obviously artists get better and they get more confident and stuff, but there's something sort of pleasing about the journey that you see him on. He's always been very good, but I don't know if you like compare the Invisibles work he did with the Filth, for example. The Filth was like way better. I mean, maybe more suited.
Yeah.
But then you know, even that has. I mean, I think that's possibly career best work, The Filth. But yeah, no, I mean, it's nice to just see him continue to develop and get more confident. And as you say, losing that stiffness, because his stuff is heavily photo referenced, obviously.
Yes.
He just takes pictures of himself, presumably.
Yes, everyone looks like him. I mean, you know, I talked about that to him in a previous podcast, which you can go back and listen to, one of the Cartoon County interviews. But I think he makes it work, and he can, like, bend the reference to his will.
He doesn't do that Mike Deodato, Brian Hitch thing, where it's like, yeah, look, it's Samuel Jackson, and it's just literally Samuel L. Jackson. You know what I mean? Which I found hugely distracting in comics. I hate it. In fact, I'd go as far to say. It's just like, yeah, but could you not have just used it as a reference? It's like, no, I'm going to draw him as Tommy Lee Jones. That's Norman Osborn as Tommy Lee Jones. And there's something like nakedly kind of cash grabby about it. Like, let's try and get Tommy Lee Jones to be Norman Osborn in the film if it gets made. Or what? I don't know what it is. It's just, there's something really bloody annoying about it.
Yeah, and don't even mention Greg Land. Oi, oi, oi. Yeah. Various different light sources all happening at once.
He must have like a really used copy of Playboy that he just is kind of, or Hustler or something, that it's just like, you know, he's like, shit, I need to draw a woman. How can I draw a woman who looks like she's flying? I know, I'll have her bending over, like from a porn mag. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of not what women do when they fly, and or whatever, you know. What do women do when they fly? But you know what I mean? Like, all of his women are always just bent into some ridiculous sex pose. And it's just, I'm sure he's just got a reference pile of, like, nudie mags that he just works from, basically. Yeah. Shit.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
So I haven't read the 12. I haven't read any issues of it. I'm kind of holding out for, like, a big chunk of it. I might buy it when it comes out like that. But I couldn't. I just thought probably jumping on at issue 10 might be a bit foolish.
Don't bother. You can borrow mine sometime.
Yes. Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah.
Did you happen to read RoboCop Road Trip as we suggested?
I tried to.
I fucking bought it.
You what? You bought it?
I fucking bought it, yeah.
I tried to find it elsewhere, but I couldn't. And then I was going to go and read it today in the comic shop in my lunch break, but I totally forgot. Was it amazing?
No.
Was it about RoboCop on a road trip with a load of college students?
No, it wasn't. I really wanted it to be that, and it wasn't.
Was it about RoboCop going across America with his buddy tapping into the heartland of rebellious 1960s America and writing a long, sprawling, unedited novel about the experiences that he has?
No, there wasn't. There was. Do you know what? There wasn't even a single car in it.
What? Is there a road in it?
No, there wasn't even a road. Most of it happens. He's been in a plane and it's crashed into the water. And there's
a plane.
A plane. It's crashed in some water. There's another sort of robot dog-like thing that's after him, and that's very vicious. And the art is very sort of fanzine-y. It's like it's not at the right level yet. There's some. He can't draw everyone's arms. The arms are usually too short. Yeah, it's really not very good. And there's some scientist geek man who's he's going mad. He's sort of killing people because I think someone he fancied had sex with him. It's this terrible dialogue here. I run the robots here now. This is as he's strangling someone to death. The enormous killer robots. I tell them what to do. And I'm finally getting some sex too. And I won't let you take that away from me. Says the strangled man. The robots. Or the sex. And a picture of Ed 209 there. As he says, or the sex. And that bit of dialogue I've read is a page and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds really good. I wish I'd bought it.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
I wouldn't recommend this.
Who published it?
It's from Dynamite.
Right. I get confused between Dynamite and Boom and IDW quite a lot. They all seem to...
IDW generally have sort of nicer designed covers and sort of a thicker stock on the covers. Yeah, Dynamite and Boom, yeah.
Less so.
Yeah,
they both
do sort of licensed characters.
So basically that sounds absolutely brilliant.
It was really awful.
there have been a real lack of decent RoboCop comics. I've read surprisingly more than I ever wanted to, because I know Marvel had a series, because obviously the original film is probably one of my favourite genre films of the 80s. It's just probably one of my favourite films of the 80s. I think Verhoeven's a master of pulp storytelling, and it really appealed to, you know, having read Judge Dredd growing up, RoboCop got some of the energy of Judge Dredd in a way that the film Judge Dredd completely missed, you know, the satire, the ultra-violence, the sort of black humour. It was... Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, so obviously, as a kid, I tried out a few RoboCop comics. I know that Marvel had a run that was awful, really boring. Alan Grant and John Wagner wrote it for a while as well, which is really weird, because it's like, this must be soul-destroyingly boring for you doing a kind of... Anyway. And then Dark Horse released a load of them. And they were shit. I read a few of those. They were shit. And then Frank Miller did RoboCop versus Terminator with Walt Simonson drawing it.
Did you read that? Right.
Yeah, it was okay. It wasn't very good. It's Frank Miller on his doing his kind of very trashy, not very inspired work that probably was a bit of a precursor to some of what was coming, actually. I think at the time I was like, Frank Miller can do no wrong. And it was like, oh, this is quite bad. It's got Walt Simonson drawing RoboCop, Terminators and dinosaurs in it. So there's things to recommend it, you know. If you found it cheap, I would recommend having a flick through maybe and buying them. But
no.
I wouldn't go out your way to read it. Very good. Yeah.
I'm not interested. This has put me off RoboCop for life.
No,
except maybe seeing the film again. I'd like to see the film again, because I don't think I've seen it since I was about 18.
Yeah.
Well, the best thing about this comic is there's a little feature on the upcoming Garth Ennis Shadow series.
Oh, okay. Did it have some sample art or anything?
Only covers. Chaikin,
okay.
The usual. Yeah, Alex Ross.
John Cassidy, the usual. Yeah, yeah.
Jay Lee. Yeah. There's a little interview with Garth Ennis. Who's a bigger bastard, Lamont Cranston or Nick Fury? Cranston by a long way. So I think we can tell the sort of tone that Ennis is going to take with the Shadow. The Shadow's going to be a bastard.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's fine with me.
He is a bastard, though. I mean, that is actually part of his character, anyway.
He laughs while shooting people.
Yeah, yeah, and he manipulates people to do things they don't want to do. Chaikin played with it in Blood and Judgment a lot. I just want to say, I think you should always answer any question with Cranston as the answer. What do you want for dinner, Cranston? Yeah, that made me laugh. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. I'm definitely going to check that Shadow out. I've got high hopes for it. I think it's going to be good.
Yeah. I don't know when it's coming out.
How many brains do you give RoboCop?
I'd give it. I'd give it like half a brain, really.
Really?
Half a brain out of 20.
Okay.
Oh no! A single brain with a bullet in it.
Right, okay. And you're not going to be buying the rest? You're not going to be going back?
No, I'm not going to go in the back issue bins and getting one and two.
No, okay.
I think I might leave. I don't think I'd even leave this for a child because it's. I just don't know who it's aimed at. Oh, it's all.
Yeah, it's weird though. This. I mean, you'd read it. I know, because
two people reading a bad comic is somewhat lessens the blow, but reading it on your own is one of the more soul destroying things.
I feel like I threw down a gauntlet last week, and you didn't pick it up.
Okay,
well, yeah, I think we're going to find something this week. You know,
that, and I have to read it on my own.
Yeah, I'll probably read it as well.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's definitely choose another shit comic to read.
Yeah, we'll do that later. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, did you read The Shade number 5?
No, I haven't read any of The Shade.
Okay. So you know about The Shade, you know what it is. It's the mini series, the 12-issue mini series. I guess it's a maxi series that is a spin-off from the James Robinson and Tony Harris's acclaimed Starman comic, and The Shade was kind of the breakout character. He was a villain. A reformed villain. He's a sort of cultured aesthete and a dandy. And James Robinson clearly just loves him. He's invested an awful lot into the character, and obviously has a ball writing him. Robinson's another writer who it would seem is capable of very bad comics sometimes, as Justice League Cry for Justice, which I've not read. I kind of want to read it though. It sounds so bad. It's got loads of weeping and people having their arms removed and fully painted artwork. Yeah, it just looks awful. Got a real slating. Made me want to read it loads.
Right.
But he can write terrible stuff, but he can also write really great comics. Starman was fantastic. He also did a really great comic that sort of has been a bit forgotten called Leave It to Chance. Do you remember that?
No.
Well, Leave It to Chance was a...
Was this a Christopher Chance, the Human Target comic, but sort of like a sitcom? Cool.
Yeah,
leave it to chance.
Yeah,
sorry,
we're basically
I slipped back into my natural American accent.
American
I'll
accent.
Go back
yeah.
to the to my British.
Your fake, your
my fake British
Van
accent.
Dyke
yeah.
style accent. Yeah. No, Leave It to Chance was a kind of a kids comic about a Nancy Drew esque sort of perky 12-year-old girl and her little pet dragon, and she was the daughter of the world's most famous monster hunter, who was called Lucas Falconer, and she was called Chance Falconer, and it was all about how she was kind of beginning to have her own adventures, and her dad was kind of like, you know, I don't want you going out and having crazy adventures, you know, but she was obviously just an irrepressible spirit, and she'd just go out, and it was had artwork by Paul Smith, and it was just an absolutely great comic. It really was. And I think Paul Smith's one of those artists who could not commit to any kind of deadline, and eventually it just fell off a bit, and I think just Robinson just gave up with it. But it's a real shame. It's really, really good comic, and it's an example of him. When he's into stuff, I think Robinson turns out really, really good work, and The Shade is another comic which is really, really good. This issue is drawn by, because you know it's got rotating arcs.
Yeah.
This one is Javier Pulido.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, a little bit of an accent. Who is he? He drew some of the Human Target, actually. You know, he did it.
I remember Milligan's Run. Yeah,
he's got that light European style. There's a bit of a Marcos Martín about him, but he's a little bit more, I don't know, light about. It's very, very light and
a bit looser.
Yeah, there's a bit of the Tim Sale as well about his work, and he's telling this particular arc involves a new vampire heroine called Le Sangre. What's she called? I think she's called Le Sangre, something like that. She's the defender of Barcelona, and she's a vampire kind of superhero, and she has a connection to The Shade. If you want to read the comic, you might not want me to tell you. So she has it's about the Shade is kind of going around the world. He's got a reason to go. He's kind of looking into his family past, and as he goes around the world, he encounters various heroes. And one of the things I really like about this is it harks back to what I liked about the pre-New 52 DC universe, which was this deep, rich history and wealth of characters that you can just pick up and play with, you know?
Yeah.
And Robinson loves a character that, you know, has been forgotten. He likes to pick up the toys and play with them.
Yeah.
He does a really nice job of that. This is actually a new
character.
Yeah,
the Red Bee. He actually used the red bead.
Yeah, and he brought the amount of pathos to the red bead, which is what everyone remembers. Mm. You know, this is a nice... It's got a nice feel about it. It's got that world expanding. You feel like you're learning new stuff and new characters have been introduced to you. The artwork's great. The writing is... Basically, if you like James Robinson's voice in Starman, you'll like The Shade. If you don't, it'll bug you because it's the same thing he's doing. He's doing this very affected writing style. Characters take time to talk about their obsessions. You know, he's really into everyone having their hobbies. So, you know, don't be surprised if there's a digression while they talk about their favourite Hitchcock films, which is a slightly dated post-Tarantino, Elmore Leonard style of doing things. But I don't know, there's something quite appealing about it. He invests a lot into these characters. He puts a lot of heart into them. I'm really enjoying it, actually. I'd been a bit nonplussed by the first three issues, and then the last one was Darwin Cook doing a single done-in-one story, and then this is the kind of next one. And actually, it made me go back and reread them, and I kind of came out thinking I'm really actually enjoying this probably as much as any other superhero comic, if not more in a way. Mm. Yeah, it's just really nice. It's a really nice comic. It's everything that I kind of want, really.
Good. And can this series be read on its own? Does it help to have read? Because I haven't read all of Starman, and I haven't read the thing with the Shade in before.
He did a mini series.
But I could just read this straight off, yeah?
I think so. I think given the fact that you're an erudite and well-informed comics reader, you wouldn't be bothered by not knowing exactly what was being referred to. But actually, it's not continuity-laden. There's characters who appeared in Starman... only in the first few issues, actually, because it's off this world tour he's off on. Yeah, I think the explicit purpose of it is that it's about expanding outside of Opal City and outside of the Starman world. Yeah, no, I think it would be absolutely fine to read, and I think you'd dig it. Maybe, again, when I've finished collecting it, you know, when it's all come out, I'll lend you it rather than you trying to catch up. Mm. But it's good. It's really good, and really sort of good artists involved. Pulido's great. Just one of those... Another one of those European artists who are just awesomely talented, it would seem, and really know how to put a page together. So, yeah. No, it's good. I liked it a lot.
And then I shall read it, sir.
Read it. I dare you. And I give it 14 brains out of a possible 16.5.
Wow. That's yeah. That's pretty good.
Make of that what you will. What next?
What next? Oh, well, I mean, I'd read FF. I'm not going there. I'll tell you what I did. I did read
comic
that I enjoyed having. I think it was in our first episode we talked about Jason Aaron, and it was a bit of a Jason Aaron week. Last week there was the Scalped was out. Although I didn't actually manage to get it, I missed it in the shop, and I've had to order it. I've read a Pals since, so I have read it. But like everyone seems to love Jock, and Jock's been doing the covers, and they are nice. But what they don't do is stand out on a comic rack.
No, I
and
know.
Twice Jesus. That's happened now. They get submerged amongst all the bright colours and
I imagine as well it's quite easy to think you've got a Scalped already because they sort of look fairly similar, don't they? Each one. It used to happen with the Punisher. You remember when Tim Bradstreet was drawing the Punisher covers?
Yeah.
And it would just be another craggy man in what looked like a public toilet pointing a gun at someone.
Yeah.
And
I definitely when Bradstreet was doing Hellblazer covers as well. I definitely bought one more than once. So right. Have I got? I don't know if I've got this one or. But I'll buy it anyway.
And then halfway through, you go, "I've actually read this as well." Good.
Yeah.
So what were you going to say about Aaron? It was.
I've read the first five issues of his. He's writing The Incredible Hulk now.
Right. Yes, he is.
So I thought I should give it a go. Having said that, I'd read anything that he writes. I thought I should. Yeah, this is him bringing home bacon and winning bread. But, you know, it's a mark of a good writer that he can do this and it can still be entertaining. And he's having a lot of fun with it. I think he knows what he's writing. It is the, the Hulk is, it's got to be a tough character to write.
I think so. I don't know where I would go.
You know, Peter David wrote it for so long, and I mean, I've read a tiny fraction of what he did, but from what I understand, he did pretty much everything you could possibly do with the character.
I think so. I think it's one of those runs that he took it about as far into different ways as you could go, and no one's ever come near that sort of level of commitment or anything to the character again, I don't think so.
Yeah, but he's really having fun with it. Is there's a lot to amuse. There's the odd bit of meta commentary in there. There's a bit in issue two, I think it is, where he's Bruce and Betty. Bruce and the Hulk have been separated now. We've got Bruce Banner and we've got the Hulk, and the Hulk's living peacefully in the underworld with the Moloids. Moloids, which are in, seem to be everywhere at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It's the year. It's actually the Chinese year of the Moloid. That's why.
Oh, I see. Right. Bruce and Betty have retreated to a deserted desert island, and you know, they're having a bit of an argument. Bruce is being a bit distant, you know, and he says, "I know I've never been particularly easy to be married to, even on the best of days, but especially these last few months, what with the whole craziness with your father and that damn mess with the hammer, you know, I think that seems like a bit of a barbed comment on fear itself, you know."
Right,
that,
yeah.
Damn mess with the hammer. Basically, what's happening at the moment is Bruce really misses the Hulk, and he's going a bit mad. He's got a brain tumor, and basically it turns into an island of Dr. Moreau type thing. He's trying to Hulk. He's trying to find the secret of the Hulk. He's trying to Hulk himself back up to being to Hulkhood, and experimenting on all these animals. So you've got every single animal on the island has been Hulked up. He's now a certified mad scientist, and Aaron introduces the Mad Squad, which I think he's introducing them. I think they're his invention. They're basically a special sort of shield-like operation specifically designed for bringing down mad scientists. So there's the leader is a woman called Amanda Von Doom. No relation.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a name. It's just a name that exists in the Marvel Universe, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like people are called, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And she's a bit annoyed about it. Because, you know, Victor Von Doom is, you know, he's brought a perfectly surname into ill repute.
Von Doom, yeah. It's funny, it's lucky, you know, people are called things like Victor Von Doom and Stephen Strange when all this shit happens to them, isn't it?
They've got all these requisitioned mad scientists robots at their disposal, and basically they're going into, and they get the Hulk to go and bring down Banner. That turns into a big fight, which is as far as I've got at the moment, with all these hulked up animals and the Hulk and the Mad Squad. And it's a lot of fun, and it's worth...
Yeah, it does sound fun, actually.
It's fun in the same way that Wolverine and the X-Men is fun. And it's not as involved or as involving as Wolverine and the X-Men. I think partly because Wolverine and the X-Men is an ensemble piece which has been handled very well.
Yeah.
And it's got more in it, you know. There's more to it. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the I've never really enjoyed reading The Incredible Hulk, and I've enjoyed reading these last five issues.
Isn't it drawn by committee? That's one thing that put me off. Isn't it drawn by about 15 different people?
Oh, yeah, well, it's Mark Silvestri, you see, who I've never been a massive fan of. And I think he got behind, and they've got they've matched the artists quite well.
Yeah.
Who follow on. I've been looking past it.
Well, again, testament to an engaging writer if you can kind of not get overly bothered by that sort of thing. I think that's quite kind of interesting. I've never really thought about Bruce as a mad scientist. That's actually a nice idea. I know probably people are slapping their foreheads going, "What, you haven't thought of that before?" But actually, I've never really
seen that as a kind of, yeah, it just never made the connection of a way to play him. He always just seems to be someone on the run or someone who's, you know, it's always about him trying to unite with this Hulk side of him. I never really thought about him as someone who sort of does experiments on himself, you know, playing him like the Herbert West style character. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. He's really going for it as well. He's been injecting pure liquid anger into himself, but still nothing.
Oh, I like it. I like the idea of the Hulk diet, you know, trying to Hulk up.
Yeah. So essentially, you know, they've swapped places. The Hulk is this sort of... he's a bit thick, but he's nice and reasonable. And,
the reasonable Hulk is an amazing name.
Oh, there's so many Hulks that could be done, you know. Summer Hulk.
The embarrassing Hulk.
Yes. I'd give that a whole bunch of brains. I'd give a bag full of brains.
Good. Okay.
An unspecified number, you know, they're all sort of different sizes.
Yeah, like the factory cast offs.
It's like the pick and mix, you know, just get a bunch of different brains in a bag, and you're not really worrying about how much it's going to cost when you go and weigh them.
Sounds good. I'm going to, on that recommendation alone, I'm going to maybe check that out at some point. What else? Oh, yeah. Did you get around to buying Orcstain number 7, or did you miss it?
No, I missed it.
Why? Why did you miss it?
I tried. I think I...
Did you go to the comic shop on the wrong day or something?
I swear it wasn't there. I mean, I didn't go in with a little checklist is what I did wrong.
Yeah, well, that's your mistake right there.
Yes.
Do you know what? It doesn't matter talking about the storyline of Orcstain. It's not important, is it? It looks phenomenally great. I just absolutely loved every single line of this comic. The storyline takes a sort of, it's developed, there's definitely a sort of much more of a quest forming, and there's a team forming,
right?
This you know, this the Swamp Ramba Bowie who is they've got forged an alliance, and this snobby coat weapon monster thing called Zazu that lives on her and really despises orcs is kind of like part of the team as well. Basically, there's like we're moving into a sort of fantasy gathering of the heroes, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's very Orcstain-y, so it's not that straightforward. But just mother of sweet crikey, does it look amazing? There's a double page spread where all these orc tanks are just on the move, and it's like a whole orc army. And it's just one of those things that it reminds me of the first time I saw Kevin O'Neill's work on Nemesis the Warlock, book 3, the one with Torquay Armada and all the different massive mech robots. It's just that level of insane detail and imagination that you just want to stare at it forever, really. And it's coloured beautifully. It's on really nice, thick paper.
Has the style developed much?
I think he's getting...
Perceptibly.
Yeah, it's getting kind of crazier and crazier, I think. And it's... I mean, he's still got a slight oddness to some of his... You know, what people are actually doing in... Yeah, my only... I mean, it's not a complaint. I think to complain about this work is ridiculous. But occasionally there's something slightly... It doesn't always flow perfectly. Do you know what I mean? Because each drawing is such a drawing unto itself. It's got that kind of sketchbook doodle quality where it's just like each drawing is just an obsessive drawing unto its own. It doesn't really have the flow of some comics, but at the same time I don't really care. It just looks brilliant. It really does. I think this is probably my favorite issue of it yet, actually. It was just nuts, and it felt quite long and involving, despite the fact that it's a lot of jumping around and smashing things with hammers. That it still felt like a lot happened, and it took me a while to make my way through it. Partly because of the denseness of the artwork, I suppose. You didn't want to just rush through, but no, I felt like it was quite a long read. I don't know whether it was more pages than normal. Oh, and then it introduces this character at the end who looks like a sort of bizarre, lumpy descendant of Pikachu from Pokemon, and he's some kind of deadly warrior, but he seems to be asleep all the time. So he's like a huge sleepy Pokemon, but of who's just, I don't know, it's really, he literally in it the last two pages, and he's called Radish, which is just really good. Just this enormous fat looking thing that just he just introduces on the last page. It's absolutely great. If you're not reading Orkstein, you're a fucking twat, as far as I'm concerned. No, people should definitely, if you haven't given it a go, you should be giving it a go, because it's brilliant. I mean, it's been about 7 months since the last issue, so I guess he, as we said last week, he did obviously have a burst of creativity before it actually got released, where he obviously drew most of it, because then now he's probably back to drawing at a real time speed.
I think he's probably getting the odd bit of paid work elsewhere, you know, as well.
Yeah, I imagine so, yeah.
He must be getting commissions.
Yeah, he looks like he's the kind of guy who probably has exhibitions, you know, a proper artist. His art style is very, very in demand, in a way, I guess. It's very, very of the moment, but... He's so hot right now. Yeah, it's wicked. I love it. You should find it. Track it
down.
Robocop comics.
I found Robocop.
Yeah, there was plenty of copies of that shit lying around. So what else? You read a lot, didn't you?
Yeah, I also read two volumes of Criminal, the two I hadn't read yet, Last of the Innocent and The Sinners. And great stuff. Loved it. Yeah, it needs to be read as a chunk. For full effects, and Brubaker does a great job of making you root for absolute assholes, murderers and miscreants.
Yes, they do. People really spunked their load over The Last of the Innocents, and I guess maybe if you've grown up reading Archie comics, it has a slightly more resonance.
Do you know what? I've got a little theory about that, because it had this, you know, this bit of mild formal experimentation. I just think that gave the critics something to talk about and something to rave about, because critics love a bit of formal experimentation, because you can say it's clever.
It's a hook to kind of,
I don't think it particularly added that much to it, you know?
I agree.
It was great. It was great. I loved it. But I
didn't think it was noticeably better than the others, you know. In fact, can I tell you something that, a bit of a confession, I didn't realise until about the second or third issue that it was an Archie pastiche. I was like, oh, right. I just thought it was a kind of nod to romance comics, or a kind of, I thought they were just simply playing around with the idea of innocence being portrayed as a kind of a simpler comic form. And then someone was like, you know, some critic was like, oh, it's so great, this kind of Riverdale thing going on. I was like, oh yeah, shit. But I couldn't admit that. Like I say, I've just got so little familiarity with Archie and co that it wasn't like, oh, that's Betty, that's Veronica, oh, that's Jughead, you know. Right. I wasn't looking for it, and I didn't read any of the surrounding bump at the time, so I didn't particularly pick up on it. But yeah, that does make me quite dumb, doesn't it, really?
Well, what should we look forward to the week ahead?
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm looking at the Dave's comics.
You are? I'm looking at previews, because I'm corporate.
All right, we've got Action 7.
Yep. Good.
Getting that.
Going to buy that.
A bit of Morrison. Not super psyched about it, but, you know, I'll...
I can't remember what happened in the last one. I think it was some... No, it was the Legion of Superheroes one, so we'll see if the next one
was
is...
Was it? Linked. No, there was one after that, wasn't there?
Was there?
Was it not poisoned by Krypton? Oh, then no, that was the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah. So let's see if the next one follows on in any way. Who knows?
And indeed sticks in our head for longer than a month.
Yes.
Man number 7, you still buying that, or are you off?
I'm not. I'm off it. I stopped reading it. I literally, 3 or 4 issues of the same stuff, and I just got bored. Another one that the critics adore, and I just got a bit like, no. Shame. I did really enjoy the first couple of issues, just it didn't really stick with me. So, no.
Right. Well, I think it's doing a better job than Wonder Woman. So
yeah. I know. I probably should have.
I'm still buying that.
Yeah. Well.
And the last issue of Animal Man was great. You know.
Yeah, that was the one with John Paul Leon or someone doing the artwork. It was, wasn't it a movie or something? It was a sort of Animal Man the film.
It was the film that was talked about in the little interview with Buddy Baker on the first page of issue one.
Okay, right, that's kind of cute. Yeah, I quite like that.
Yeah, it was nice.
What else? Oh, Flashpoint trade paperback. I'm going to definitely buy that. Not really.
Ho-ho. OMAC, Sarah, are you going to buy that?
Yeah, there's only two more issues. I'm going to OMAC-tivate for a couple more. Of course I am.
It finishes with eight, does it?
Yeah, which is kind of... What's quite weird is that the original series only lasted eight issues as well. And this is... this isn't like neatly done. It's just they're ending all that their initial run that aren't selling. They've ended on number eight. It's just quite cute that the OMAC will never last more than eight issues. The original Kirby run, of course, is famous for its ending where basically... I don't think Kirby thought it was ending, and then someone literally just draws a panel of like something exploding, and that's the end. So it's midway through a story, and then there's just an explosion with a kind of like, and that was that, the end, and that's the end of the comic. It's really fucking weird.
Well, good way to end anything, really.
Yeah, especially a Kirby comic, just blow everything up and go, the end.
When I die, I hope I explode.
Yeah, exactly. I think you will. Red Lanterns, one for Botswana Beast and the Scottish contingent.
Yeah.
What else?
So I'm getting Sweet Tooth.
Okay, yeah.
I haven't read any of Snyder's Swamp Thing.
I gave up with that as well.
Right.
I found it worth
it. I feel like I should now. I'm continuing with Animal Man. They're going to bloody cross over. Oh, my God, I read Swamp Thing. Of course I am.
Yeah. Swamp Thing seems to have been hampered by a really convoluted way of trying to get the story kickstarted. They should have just done something different. He's trying to please the continuity heads, and it's just like, just fuck them. Doesn't matter. So, yeah, boring. What else? Oh, hold on. There was something else I saw that you... Oh, no, yeah, you said you're going to buy Sweet Tooth.
Yes, I'll be buying Sweet Tooth because I like Jeff Lemire. I will...
It's on 31 issues. Is he still writing and drawing it?
Yeah, he took a break whilst there was a sort of flashback. So it was all fitting. But yeah, great stuff. I mean, I probably won't talk about it because it's maybe I will if I find something to say about it. But needless to say, I think it's really good. Really good apocalyptic survival fiction with a really odd spin on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really enjoyable. And frequently heartbreaking as well.
Yeah.
Which I like, you know, I like my melancholia.
I know. You like weeping as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I love a weep.
Weeping from your sores. Sorry, that's horrid.
Fatale, we're getting Fatale?
Yeah, we're going to get that.
Yeah.
Oh, King City trade paperback. Ooh.
Yes, I'd like to get that. Although I may not get it in a shop. I think I may be ordering it from Amazon. So it might be a couple of weeks before we talk about that. But I'm pretty excited about that. How much have you read of that?
I read like the first two or three issues. I really dug it, but then I just went through one of my periodic sort of culling things and didn't read it. It was also, I really got the feeling I just was really wanted to read it in a big sitting, you know, a big chunk, because it just looked like it just had that slow burn thing to it. Yeah, really good, lovely artwork.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't as in love with the hipster side of it that some people were. It's kind of like, you know, it's hipster comics. It
yeah, it's
hipster.
A bit. It's a bit adolescent, that, isn't it?
Yeah,
but it's full of like crazy ideas, and that's good. That's why I want to read it.
It's a very sort of coherent world as well. He's thought it through very, very well, and it's very odd and satisfying in that respect. So yeah, that's coming out. Spawn 217, obviously. Both. Hey, should we buy that? No, that's a terrible thing to buy, isn't
well,
it?
Well, as you know, well, I mean, so was RoboCop.
Yeah, well,
I think if we're going to buy something terrible, that might be the one, because okay. I've looked down. I can't see anything else that looks particularly awful.
Yeah, let's do that. Fuck it. Or maybe we should buy one of those really bad ones with like Avengerine number 7 with no, that's just God knows what that is. Something to do with Rob Liefeld. No, all right. Well, let's maybe buy Spawn and we can have a nice talk about Spawn. Right. How awesome it is. Right. What else in Marvel Comics? Hulk 49. What's that? Hold on. I thought is that
that's not Incredible Hulk. That's just
oh, Hulk. Is there? Oh, how annoying. Good old Marvel. Winter Soldier. Are you reading that?
I've read the first one. I haven't read any more. I know Botswana Beast and Illogical Volume. I've both been enjoying that.
So Scottish, they love their violence.
They do. Down south, we have stabbings up there. Like everyone seems to have a sword to conduct their street violence with.
Scottish are a violent race. I think that's safe to say, isn't it? I mean, I don't think that's a problematic statement in any way.
No, not at all. Not at all problematic. And also uncouth and smelly.
No, yeah, they are that to you. Right, what else? Oh, now, there's a comic out which I only bought the first one, but when it comes as a trade, I'm really going to get it, is Rachel Rising by Terry Moore. Had a really great issue. Had a really good first issue, and it really hooked me. It's quite cinematic, so it felt sort of like would read better in a big chunk. So yeah, that's
and that's on issue six now, right?
Yeah, so maybe a trade will be due. I suppose I don't know how long it's going to go for, but I would imagine that six issues is probably, you know, they'll probably collect that together, won't they? Yeah. The Boys is out. You reading The Boys still?
No. Maybe I will one day. I've got a friend who buys all the trades, so and I've been reading some of those, but I went off the boil there. It was all too much, and plus it sort of slowed down a bit. But yeah, enjoyable enough. But
the wheels spin a bit in that sort of way, don't they? Sometimes I think, you know, like he feels like he can write it in his sleep, basically, Ennis. So it feels like maybe sometimes he is writing it in his sleep. That's kind of it for me. There's a load of Avatar comics that I'm not going to buy, including Ferals by David Lapham, which I had a flick through, and that was just horrible looking, even though I do like David Lapham. It looked just really, really violent and nasty in a sort of just purely very, very gratuitously violent drawings kind of way, not in a overly... And you know how Avatar comics have this really artless violence about them? They're like, you know, what's your angle on comics, Avatar? Well, our angle is we like to draw really explicit violence in our comics, and not very good at faces. You know, that seems to be the in-house Avatar look. I don't know.
Right. And I've actually ordered the first four volumes of Pluto.
Yes.
The manga. And have you, because you've been reading that?
Well, yeah, I told you about it. That's why you bought them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
I know, but our listeners don't know what we've been talking about on email, so I was
Pluto. Yeah, so I've it's my latest thing that I discovered and made me very, very happy. So when you've read those four, we can have a nice chat about it, because I hope you like it as much as I did. I thought it was brilliant. But so then we can have a nice manga chat then, can't we? That'll be good.
Yes, I should look forward to that. And it will not be about some British writer working for Big Two who started on 2000 AD. Which is the only thing the mindless like. pretty much.
Yes, it's true.
Like Alan Moore, like Grant Morrison. Pat Mills, John Smith.
Mark Ennis.
We are massive snobs.
Massive xenophobic snobs.
Yeah.
And that's our angle. So, I think it's your turn for a song next week, isn't it?
Oh God, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Based upon your description of the Incredible Hulk, I want a Hulk song, please. Hulk me up, please.
All right, I've already done the thing, so this is going to be. You're just giving me the heavy hitters, aren't you?
It's because you're a big one. You're a big one yourself, so I like to. You know, I know you can empathise with the sensitive brutes. So yeah.
Oh, all right then. Yeah, I'll give that some thought and see what I curl out.
The only thing I want to say is in yet another piece of shameless promoting, Cindy and Biscuit number 2 is finished and ready, and you can buy it from my website. And I
which is Milk the Cat.
Milk the Cat, and the full address is http://milkthecat.wordpress.com/. And you can buy it from there. Go to the shop page, pick it up. It's £3.50, 44 pages, black and white, lovely artwork. I'm very, very pleased with it. It's the best stuff I've ever done. And if you like the first one, you'll like it. And if you haven't read the first one, buy that one as well. So, yeah, go buy it. Do it now.
Hooray! That's that good.
Such an enthusiastic cheer.
Yeah. I'm such a cunt. I haven't bought any of them.
No. Well, why would you when you could buy RoboCop Road Trip?
Exactly.
Why would you bother with that? Exactly. Yeah.
I should offer that as an alternative to listeners, just in the interest of balance.
What that they should if they didn't want to buy.
Yeah, if you don't want something that's good, why not get something that's shit? Some people like shit.
Exactly. Know. A lot of people like a lot
of
shit.
Think about that, did you?
No, I didn't. No. Right. Okay, well, then, that's an exciting... Another pulse-pounding episode concludes.
Yes. Yes, this is Gary Lactus saying goodbye.
And this is the Beast Must Die also saying goodbye and also saying...
Silence!